Is that the new iPhone?
Yeah, got it on T-Mobile. Fastest iPhone deserves America's fastest LTE network.
Introducing the amazing iPhone 8. It's the best iPhone yet, now on America's best unlimited network. For a limited time, save up to $300 on the amazing iPhone 8 after 24 monthly bill credits. And now join T-Mobile's iPhone upgrade program for free.
Eligible trade-in and finance agreement required. If you cancel service, you may lose promo credits. Contact us for details. Video at 480p. Small fraction of users over 50 gigs per month may have reduced speed. See store for details.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearlessOrder.com and the Snapback. Joining me today is one of my colleagues. He is one of our lead writers at FearlessOrder.com, and he's also the co-host of the excellent Chase Down podcast with Carter Rodriguez. Justin Rowan, what's going on, my man?
Not too much. Thanks for having me. You don't get sick of me from dealing with me all day. You wanted me on for more. I'm stunned at this.
Yeah, literally, I think I talk to you and Carter, even if it's just like one sentence blurbs in G-Chat, more than I talk to my own family sometimes, because we're sickos who like talk about basketball all day on the internet, even if we're like supposed to be like at our quote-unquote jobs. But
we love to produce that sweet, sweet content.
Hashtag content. Hashtag played Chetty. Hashtag like Chetty. That's like half our G-Chat, if we're being honest about that. But what we're talking about today is the Cavs' rotation. Now, we are a few days away from the first preseason game. We still don't know exactly who's going to start, who's going to not. We have quotes from J.R. Smith indicating that as of right now, he's the starter. At practices, at least one practice I was on Wednesday, it was Wade's first practice, to be fair. JR was still the starter. Wade was playing on a second unit. Also, Jay Crowder was with the what we'd expect to be the other starting players, with Tristan Thompson on that second unit. There are other guys that are in contention to play. I mean, Zizic and Chetty would be the young guys. You have Fry and other guys that weren't in those fives as well. Cavs, I think, Justin, are deeper than they have been in some time. But let's start with the most, I think, interesting one as of right now, because it's so fresh. Dwayne Wade, you could do a couple different things with him. I said this when I talked to Sean Hytken. I think he's best coming off the bench. I think, especially when you get Isaiah back, that's the best role for him. I think him and Kevin Love with bench units should be a really, really good pairing to kind of keep things floating when LeBron is out. But what would you do with Wade? And would it change from what we have right now, which is potentially Derrick Rose starting at point guard, to when Isaiah, in theory and on paper, should come back December, January, around that time, and be able to take over the starting point guard duties?
Well, I think if he's used properly, Dwayne Wade is a better pickup and addresses more needs than Carmelo Anthony would have for the Cavs. Because I really do think they need his supplemental playmaking. He also solves a lot of issues, or not solves, but he alleviates a lot of the problems when you talk about dealing with small ball lineups. Because when you look at the Cavs point guards, at least the traditional point guards, Jose Calderon might be the best defender out of that group. It's like the Cavs punted point guard defense for this season. And they really, with taking a step back offensively and no longer having Kyrie Irving, that dropping off defensively really, really does matter. You need to be a little more stout because you don't have as much room for error. So I really do think that you can play Wade in a lot of those closing lineups at the point guard position, because you're playing him alongside LeBron James. You have Wade, who's averaged 5.7 assists for his career. LeBron's obviously a phenomenal playmaker. So I really do think that gives you versatility. In terms of who should start, I'm in favor of starting Wade at the point guard position alongside JR until Isaiah gets back. I think there's value in keeping Rose with the bench and keeping him in that unit that he's going to play in the postseason. We saw Ty Lue do that last season after they traded for Korver, that he kept him with the bench rotation and would start Jordan McRae or DeAndre Liggins over him just to keep him in that role. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Lue do the same thing with Rose now.
Yeah, the tricky thing I think that Lue has to figure out how to navigate is really figuring out what you want to really, who you want to play Wade with. Do you want to play him with LeBron? Do you want to play him with Love? Do you think he can play with Rose? Do you need to supplement him with shooting? And how much are you going to try to put the ball in his hand? He's someone who's also a really good cutter. I mean, if Chris Herring from 538 had a post that people can go read, I'll put it in the show notes here on the in the podcast description, where he wrote about Wade's fit, how the Cavs could make him sort of look like the younger Wade. When he's played with LeBron in Miami, he cut a lot more. It's something the Cavs in general, I think, have to kind of figure out, is how they're going to incorporate these guys who cut. Jay Crowder was a really good cutter in Boston. He's not necessarily a stand-in, catch-and-shoot guy. It's kind of like Korver, where Korver came off a lot of screens and then last year had to adjust, which is a kind of relatively small adjustment, right. But it's an adjustment to just standing there and waiting for LeBron to pass you the ball. And the way Ty Lue talks about Isaiah Thomas and has talked about him and talks about Derrick Rose, I don't think they think it's exactly the same thing as Kyrie. You know, I think they do expect a difference, and maybe that's where we see some nuance. But Wade is another part of that. He's someone who can attack the pick and roll, he can attack an ISO. But I don't think he's quite as static and rigid in what he's going to do as Kyrie. And that's no slight on Kyrie. Kyrie's elite at what he does. But Wade offers something a little bit different. And I do think, like, him as a nominal point guard, at least, makes a lot of sense. The problem is if you have to play Derrick Rose, I don't think you can play them all together. Defensively, it's a nightmare, and I think they just don't fit together in terms of spacing and in terms of what they do. They don't complement each other in a good way.
No, not at all. Especially if you got those two plus LeBron. Like, that's three very high-usage wings, or guys that are used to high usage alongside LeBron, and then you're neglecting Kevin Love even further, which at this point, Kevin Love's the second-best player on the team. They need to prioritize getting him the ball and getting him involved. It doesn't necessarily need to result in a huge spike in shots, but initiate some of the offense through Love. Get him touching the ball, get hit, utilize him as a passer, things they haven't done in the past. I think that needs to be a priority, and if you're starting Wade and Rose together alongside LeBron, not only is that a spacing nightmare, it's just too much usage on the wing, and the usage gets even, or the spacing gets even worse when you consider there's Tristan Thompson in the middle.
Yeah, I mean, with Tristan, it becomes, right, it's even more of a problem because teams ignore him. Teams will ignore Rose. Teams will absolutely just pretend he doesn't exist. I don't know exactly about Wade. I'm still in the process of watching film from last year on him, but he's someone, in theory, that teams could abandon. And then you're putting Love back into what he was, and it kind of robs him of a chance to be more dynamic, to be more used in a way that kind of fits in what he is in terms of how good he is as the second best player on the team. It's complicated. It's not an easy thing, and it's not like a system changing thing necessarily. I think it is like half of one almost, maybe. Mm-hmm. But it is a big question. Like, this is a big question for Ty Lue, and we're gonna get to Lue later. But this is like a chance where they maybe have to adapt and they have to figure it out. And it is gonna be a change. Like, I don't think they're gonna look totally different than what we've seen. But this Cavs team should play differently than they have the past couple of years, and I think it'd be kind of concerning if they try to just do the same stuff they've done.
Yeah, you need to get a little more creative. Isaiah Thomas really flourished in Boston because of what Al Horford was able to open up for him. You can't expect Isaiah to produce at the same level Kyrie did on the same looks. Like, you can't just expect him to say, all right, we're going to send four guys onto the other side of the court. You beat an elite defender. Like, as great as Isaiah Thomas is, that's just not his game. He really did thrive off of those handoffs, off those actions with Al Horford. And as much as he can create in isolation, it really, his game benefits from being well-rounded and getting different types of looks. I just don't think you can play the exact same way. You need to make some adjustments. And for that reason, I really think that this season is going to be one that we learn a lot about Ty Lue. Because in the past, there just weren't options. There was no depth to the team at all. Amon Shumpert was the backup point guard. Jordan McCray and DeAndre Liggins combined for 23 starts last season. Kevin Love missed a big chunk. JR missed a big chunk of last season. There's just no depth. Players were saving their energy. This year, if guys aren't stepping up, I mean, when you look at that bench unit in particular, you got guys with chips on their shoulder, guys like Jay Crowder, guys that are looking to prove themselves in the league, in Jeff Green and Derrick Rose, show that they're not on their way out and that they can still contribute. You got Jetty Osman, who is trying to break into the league. There's a lot of guys that have something to play for, and I think that really helps boost the energy level from the rest of the team, and it also gives them assurance that they can play hard for the minutes that they are in, because they don't have to play 38-40 minutes. The bench units are going to be able to come in. You got Dwayne Wade that can run a second unit now, which should be a big relief for LeBron. So it's a totally different team, and how Ty Lue uses it is going to be really, really interesting.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite.
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Yeah, but let's just get into Lue now, because I think he's sort of the through line of all of this. I would posit that we don't know a ton about him as a coach, and I don't think if he got another job tomorrow, it would be as drastic of a difference as I think like David Blatt 2.0 in the NBA might be. Like, I think if we get David Blatt in the NBA again, I think you're going to get a guy who coaches differently than he has. Like, I think that's just going to be what he is, because I don't think he really ran a lot of his system. But with Lue, I think we know a couple of things. I think we know he trusts veterans. I think like that's just fundamentally a key part of his thing. I think you can just look at how he talks about Jeff Green, and look at how he talks about how he basically didn't talk about Chetty Osman by talking about Chetty Osman, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
and like let you know like what like he doesn't have time, I think, for Chetty, which I think is a fair critique, that like not just that it's Chetty, but it's that you need to like value young players in some degree. Like, you just kind of have to do that. I think you have to trust those guys and empower them in some way. What Lue did as a coach last year is he catered to the team strengths. That's what he did. He connects with guys and he catered to the team strengths. This year is a chance for him to put his own vision on this. Like, we know he orchestrated the offense and the defense. He was making a lot of those calls, particularly in the playoffs. He was the one that came up with the quote-unquote secret defense.
Oh, yes.
Which, whatever. It's
hashtag secret defense.
It was LeBron, like, playing free safety. You know, big deal. He has a chance to, like, redesign the Cavs in some ways this year. He has a piece in Jay Crowder that is more versatile. A more versatile piece than he's really ever had. He has depth on the wing. He has young guys he could use. He has bigs he can just throw in minutes. And he has a variety of different types of bigs, depending on who makes the final roster. The other part of this is, his starting point guard is hurt. And he has a lot of guys that are kind of playing similar spots. And he has to pick what attributes he likes the most. Like, does he value Kyle Korver shooting over Amon Shumpert's possible defense? Does he value...
possible is the right word.
Yeah. Does he value...
Kyle Korver is probably a better defender.
Well, yeah, we'll get to him in a little bit. But, you know, does he value Derek? Does he value what Derek Rose does? And more so than, like, you or I might, right? Like, and he knows more than us, obviously. But, like, does he value what Rose is at this point? How does he envision Wade? Like, these are, how does he envision really using Crowder, you know? Is he willing to go bigger with Crowder at the two? Like, these are questions we don't know. I think this is the chance for Lue to, like, actually put an imprint on this team in a way we haven't seen him do in the last year and a half. That, to me, is one of the most intriguing storylines about this Cavs team.
Can I just say, just because you mentioned Crowder at the two, I love the addition of Jay Crowder. I think he's going to have the most impact this season out of anyone we got in that trade. But Jay Crowder cannot defend guards. I know he's a very, very good defender, but he's a great defender of forwards. He can defend the three and the four. That man cannot stay in front of guards. He will get exposed. He will get burned. Devin Booker will drop 73 on him.
Yeah, I mean, and then he'll get mad about him on Instagram in the comments. He'll tweet, he'll like go comment on that photo.
Right.
Get mad about it.
I even remember Kyrie's a bad example because Kyrie does it to everybody, but like it was all nearly effortless. Like he just didn't even notice that he was there. And that's not necessarily an indictment on him. It's just, it's not possible to play Jay Crowder at the two. In my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, do you think there's any workable situations where it's like Thompson, Love, LeBron, Crowder with LeBron maybe guarding a two?
I mean, it's possible. Like, I do think the Cavs' quote-unquote death lineups, depending on who they're going up against, will be some variation of Wade at the point, JR at shooting guard, Crowder at the three, LeBron at the four, and either Love or Thompson, depending on whether or not they need stops. I just think those are very, very versatile lineups. They're long, they have playmaking, they have shooters. You got Tristan, who's just absolutely relentless, or you got Love, who's spacing the floor. I think those are great looks, but neither of those involve LeBron or Crowder consistently guarding twos. They can switch onto them, but I don't think you want to start either of those guys off guarding a guard for extended stretches.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I think they might have to try it at some point. Like I think that's certainly going to be on the table. But what do you think of Lou? Like our friend, your co-host, our co-worker, Carter Rodriguez, tweeted that like people have a very low opinion of Ty Lou. I don't think that's necessarily untrue. I think for a guy who's won a coach, like I don't, you know, he doesn't have like the oh my god, he's a brilliant, a la Steve Kerr, a la Popovich, obviously Spo, you know, at this point. And I think some of that's really fair. I don't think he's particularly imaginative. He's definitely got a lot of Doc Rivers in him, for better or for worse. What do you think of Lou as a coach? I'm just broadly speaking.
I think Lou's a good coach. He's certainly not the top tier, and after that, it gets really, really muddled. I think when we find out how good a coach somebody is, it's when you see drastic changes in the personnel and adapting systems to better suit the players that they have. It's hard to judge Lou because when you look at the team, especially last season, there was a decision from the top down that they are not going to prioritize or care about the regular season. When you have the players that aren't caring about the regular season, ownership's on board, and everyone's just saving themselves. You have a paper-thin team. It's really hard to judge Lou because it's like you can't hold the players accountable when this is the message coming down basically from the top. But I do think in playoff series, we've seen the Cavs adapt. I think he's consistently out-coached most of the teams that they've gone against. I think they've had very good game plans. This past finals might be a bit of an exception, but then again, I really do think it came down to execution more so than game plan.
I also think the Cavs are just
as well as personnel.
The Cavs are just outgunned. Like I think like Lou could have coached a perfect series, and the Cavs still might have lost in six.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I don't disagree at all. But that's the first time where it's like, okay, I didn't really see anything groundbreaking or mind blowing from Ty Lue.
Yeah, I don't either. Like, I don't mean this as like a dig, but like I think he's kind of like a lot like Doc Rivers. Like he comes from that coaching school.
He absolutely does.
Like he trusts in guys that he knows. Like that's why people should find someone, like find a boss that loves and supports you, like Ty Lue seems to love Jeff Green.
I think what Ty Lue prioritizes, and I think it's a smart way to coach if you have the personnel, it's nothing too complicated, but when you have players that are high IQ, you have simple plays designed to maximize the talents, designed to maximize mismatches and really attack those mismatches. And you see tons of coaches get criticized for not going with stuff like that. Like Steve Kerr gets a lot of flack for not running more pick and roll and not really working to expose guys. And when you look at how consistently the Cavs went with the Kyrie-LeBron pick and roll, with Kyrie setting a screen, and just how often that worked, that LeBron's on a point guard or Kyrie gets switched onto a small forward, he's developed these strategies that have worked incredibly well, and they've had incredibly effective offenses. So while it's nothing revolutionary, I do think sometimes teams have a tendency to get a little too cute. And I do think that Ty Lue has done a good job of maximizing what he's had. But now that there's more options, I think we're going to learn more about him as a coach and exactly what he can do when he has tools.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think this is 100% one of the chances we're going to learn the most. Like, I think this is the year, throughout the year, with how things could go with the depth that the Cavs have, that...
With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn 4x gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are 4 for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are 10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.
We're going to learn something about Lou. Let's just talk about this real quick. How much depth do the Cavs actually have? Like, how good is the Cavs' depth actually? We talk about it a lot. We bandy about it a lot. But is it actually good depth?
I think it's good depth. I really do think that this is an improved roster. Chetty Osman is not going to get minutes, and I think that's probably the right decision when you look at what the other options are. Maybe by mid-season he's going to develop and start to make an impact.
I'm going to interrupt you and tell you that 2 months ago, and I'm not going to tell you that you said this, but Carter told me this, and so screw you, Carter. I said Chetty Osman was likely to play a good amount of the Aaron Canton. I feel much better about that, and I felt good about it then. I feel very confident that he's going to spend at least some time in Canton this year because of how the Cavs have built this roster and because Dwayne Wade's going to eat up his minutes too. And I can't see him getting minutes ahead of Shump, Korver, Jeff Green, Richard Jefferson, Dwayne Wade,
I think he could get minutes over RJ.
It depends. I think it depends on the matchup because I think they're going to use RJ in a way that's like, we need you. But that's still five guys if it's not RJ. It's still five guys ahead of him plus that LeBron James guy.
No, I definitely agree, and I think he's going to be buried to some extent. I think there's a potential for him to get more minutes later on in the season. I think bringing him along slowly is the right way to go. There's going to be an adjustment going from Europe to the NBA. But if we're looking at the team last year, like, he would have played huge minutes. Like, look how many minutes Derek Williams got once they added him. You put Chetty Osman on the team, for better or worse, like, there were no better options. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's a deeper team in comparison to last season. When you look around the league, is it the deepest team in the league? No, probably not. But I do think that they do have effective depth. And even though there are older options on this team, I think if you're playing those guys in limited minutes, they can be effective still. And limited minutes is all that's really available when you have so many options.
Yeah, and it's interesting because LeBron kind of, like, he's been a Band-Aid. He is a Band-Aid, like a human Band-Aid, addition to being the best player in the world. You know, like, in particular, like, he's a Band-Aid for issues you have. Like, he just ends up being someone that can kind of allow you to mix and match different things and figure stuff out. Like, he could allow you, in theory, to, like, play, to not have to play a point guard if Rose is really bad. Really, yep. Wade could go there, and you have enough ball handling there to make that work, and that's why Wade's sort of valuable. I think they're going to play Rose, which is a whole thing, but we'll see what they do. I mean, I think there are questions about, like, how the rotation will actually work. I think, like, there are still things we just don't know, but it's all sort of interesting in a couple different ways. Justin, the other thing that we know now is that Jay Crowder, at least at the first practice that we talked about, was with the starting lineup. And before LeBron rolled his ankle, and he's fine, listeners, don't worry, it was the starting lineup was Derrick Rose, J.R. Smith, LeBron James, Jay Crowder, Kevin Love at the five. And with the backup lineup of the next five being Wade at the point, I'm forgetting the rest of this. Shumpert, Korver, Tristan Thompson, and I'm forgetting somebody there, but it was like that basic.
Probably Fry.
Yeah, I think Fry. No Zizic. I'm gonna look this up as we record this, so I'm not like being an idiot here. But what do you make of Crowder being like Lou from day one, not going with what has been really successful the last 2 years, 3 years really, with that Love Thompson duo up front? What do you make of him putting Tristan back into the bench in some way and starting Crowder and getting him on the floor with LeBron from the opening tip, if that's what he sticks with?
I don't think that's going to be what he sticks with. I think that was just a technique to get Wade used to kind of running that bench lineup to some extent or getting familiar with the Cavs plays. He did say earlier, just a couple weeks ago, that Tristan Thompson would remain the starter, and that's not something that they're planning on changing. Obviously, it's still a fluid situation, but I would get really nervous if Thompson wasn't in that lineup, just because that really does leave you with absolutely no rim protection. And as much as Kevin Love had a sneaky, decent defensive season, I just think that's asking a little bit too much of him, especially if we're going on the assumption that LeBron is just going to absolutely coast and play bad regular season defense again. Because for that to work in a playoff series, you need all five guys really buying in defensively for those lineups to dominate. And I just don't think you're going to see that consistently from the Cavs in the regular season. If they go that route, I don't think it would be a total disaster, but it would make me nervous. And I think that's just asking a little bit more from both Love and LeBron than you should in the regular season.
Yeah, I really like it as a move at some point. I think it should be a lineup staple. I agree with you. I don't know how I feel about it. I like the idea of Crowder and LeBron starting together, but it does kind of leave you kind of in a weird defensive position, especially because Rose is such a bad defender. Like, teams could run one. Teams that have, like, the capabilities of running 1-5 pick and rolls could do that over and over again and really put the Cavs in trouble. That's like, certainly a possibility and something teams certainly will do. The other aspect of it that I think is sort of interesting is that I do like the idea of Thompson kind of being coming off the bench and demoralizing teams in that way, and I do like the idea that like him and Wade could be bench lineup guys, like a problem.
Yeah,
I don't hate that in theory.
And if Zizic was ready to start it and ready to be that guy, then I think even though Thompson is likely the better player at that point, I think there would be a strategic advantage to doing that. But the fact is that Tristan Thompson is the team's only proven center at this point.
Yeah, and like Zizic, I think, could like be a minutes eater. Like, I think he's good enough to maybe play that role. But like, you don't want to start Fry either, you know? And like, Love and Fry is a deadly offensive duo. We've seen that time and time again, but it's also something that...
It works better as a blitz in the middle of the game.
Yeah, it 100%.
And I feel the same way about the Love LeBron Crowder front court. Like, that's why I mentioned it earlier. I do think it's an effective lineup. I just don't think that that's something you necessarily need to throw at other teams' starting units.
Right now, with the Cavs' roster, let's say we get to June, everyone's healthy. What do you think you would close with?
Against who?
I mean, like, look, there's one team. There's one team I think that we think about, and it's Golden State.
Against every team other than Golden State, I'd probably still close with Isaiah Thomas. Against the Warriors, I'm still skeptical of what he can do, and on both ends of the court. I think the Warriors' length has shown historically that it can disrupt Isaiah, and defensively, I just don't know what you do with him. I think against the Warriors, you close with Wade, Smith, Crowder, LeBron, and Thompson. Against every other team, I'd close with Isaiah. I guess Wade would still be there, but I don't have to have Wade there. I think Smith is a better player and a better defender at this point of his career. The only real questions to me, it basically comes down to whether or not you can play Isaiah in those situations.
Agree with that. I do think that's a concern. I think what I might do is close, like most nights, I think my closing five, I would do offensive defensive switching with Love and Thompson, I think. And I would go Wade, JR, LeBron, Crowder, and then flip those fives as you can. I think that's what I would do.
Right.
And I think Isaiah has to be in there in certain games. He's too good not to be when he's healthy. But I kind of like the length a little bit. And I think you could do some Isaiah switching out there as well. And we'll see how him and Wade fit, too. That's another thing we'll have to see is, like, can those guys play together? You know, and I think, like, who do you pair Wade with as a big? Like, is it Love? Or is it Thompson? Like, who do you pair him with to kind of maximize him if he does come off the bench? And we'll see how Lou does approach this. We're still time away from first preseason game. That could tell us nothing in actuality. But Justin... I mean, I'm probably going to learn nothing, honestly. Like, I never expect to learn anything about this team until, like, May, you know, which is frustrating. But I think the year should be different. Justin, we'll wrap it up on this last. We're going to play a little game. I'm going to ask you two names, and then you're going to say who you would rather play in the rotation. Are you ready?
Okay.
Are you ready? All right. Number one for the third point guard spot. If the Cavs have to use a emergency point guard, break the glass and have someone, whether that's signing someone or bringing someone back, who would you rather have to turn to if you needed to? Kay Felder or Jose Calderon?
Jose.
Yeah, I think I agree.
That's an easy decision.
For me, I get made fun of. Carter G-chats me all the time about this. But like I think like Felder could be good enough, but I think like, yeah, you trust Calderon even if he was kind of bad last year. I wonder if they can keep him. One of my pet theories right now is that they're not just like cutting him because I think they'd like to maybe find a way to make that work, as to just have like actual depth behind Rose, who's another guy with an injury problem. Like I think that's
a shooter that doesn't turn the ball over. Like,
yeah, and doesn't maybe won't break down.
Yep.
Like, that matters. Next up, Kyle Korver, Amon Shumpert.
Korver.
I'm asking you, like, easy things here. But, like, Korver, I think it's an interesting question because it's, like, you got to pick – are you picking shooting over, like, possible defense? Like, that's kind of, I think, what you're picking between, right? Like, that's what
you're doing. I think Korver plays good enough team defense. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think he's a total liability on that end. The offensive upside is just too great. And with other non-shooters that are projected to play major roles on the team, I think what Korver brings is more important.
I also think, like, he's one shot away from having a very different finals, you know? Like, I think that – and Shumpert, like, wasn't on the floor, and I think that would probably stay the case again this year.
Yeah, they missed a lot of open threes.
They really, really did. Channing Frye or Ante Zizic?
Is it fair for me to say Channing Frye in 2017 and – I'm leaning towards Zizic in 2018. Like, I think it's going to take him some time. I think he would actually benefit from playing a couple games in Canton as well. I think there's going to be a bit of an adjustment period. But Zizic has, like, a grown man's body, and he's a smart player. I think he moves fairly well for his size. And I really do think he can kind of play a bit of that Mozgov role. Once he gets accustomed to playing against NBA-level athletes. Channing Frye, as I said, it kind of works best as a blitz, as something teams aren't really expecting. And in the middle of the game, all of a sudden, Fry's out there with either Love or LeBron in the bench, and teams just kind of freak out because you got this great three-point shooter with so much length. But yeah, that's a matchup based question, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're mostly right. I think it kind of depends on if, you know, Fry's healthy, I guess, and like kind of what you're going for. I think if you're looking to play Thompson sort of longer, and I think if you trust Zizic, like I think Zizic could just come in and eat minutes for longer stretches just by being large. Assuming this is also just kind of assumes that Tavares isn't around, right?
Right.
I think Fry, like if you're trying to blitz teams, I think he's still someone you could definitely go to, and I think it's worth noting. Jeff Green or Richard Jefferson is the last one I have, because I think we both kind of assume, and we talked about this, that Chetty is a little bit further back than he might have been in our heads.
I'll go with Richard Jefferson just because I trust him more.
Better shooter, better defender, and he's bigger. Like, he's just stronger. And, like, I just, Jeff Green is, like, I think teams have made them.
He's Jeff Green.
He's freaking Jeff Green. Like, this is going to be, if this turns into Derek Williams 2.0, like, I'm not going to be a happy guy. Because, like, that is still, like, for me, the most annoying thing about last season is that people, like, were like, yeah, Derek Williams is great. And, like, that's just not really accurate. It's not true.
Yeah, there's a few people out there that are upset that the Cavs were too cheap to bring back Derek Williams.
Still unsigned, by the way.
Same with Darren.
Look, I think Darren Williams is chilling and enjoying life. Like, I don't think he cares.
I don't think so either.
I think he's just like, yeah, I'm going to like focus on my MMA gym and relax, man. But Justin, thank you again for coming on. We'll wrap it up on this thing. What's like the one thing you're looking forward to seeing in the first preseason game?
God.
Mine's just be weird. I just want to see if, like, A, if Lou gets Chetty's name right, and if he plays him.
Yeah, I want to see Chetty play and seeing Dwayne Wade in a Cavs jersey. That's going to be weird.
That's going to be really weird.
I don't think I don't think you're learning any life lessons from preseason game one. From the Cavs.
I don't think I'm gonna. But, I don't think we can learn anything about this team for like 2 months.
I don't think we're gonna learn anything about this team for like 5 or 6.
I just think there's like.
Although I do think they are going to try a lot harder in the regular season, but there's no way this team doesn't still keep another switch to be flipped. Like, yeah. Even if they become like a 60-win team in the regular season, that'll likely be more just a result of their depth. Try just a little bit harder, and just how awful the Eastern Conference got. That's going to fatten up their records big time.
The East is very, very, very bad. Like, just atrocious. Like, the fact that the Cavs have the Pacers and the Pistons in their division. Like, just
and you didn't even Pacers mention the worst team in their division.
The Chicago Bulls.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like, good God.
Oh,
like good God.
Yeah. The Cavs record is going to get a little fattened up just by being in the Central. Although we'll still probably lose every game to Indy.
Every game Indianapolis, just Miles Turner drops 35.
Yeah, every single time. There are no wins to be had in Indianapolis.
Yeah, probably not. Justin, thank you again for coming on. Just give everyone a reminder out there where they can find you on Twitter.
You can find me at Cavs Canada. Just slap a Cavs in front of Canada, and that's what you do. That's how you find me. You can find my writing, Fear the Sword, Press Basketball, Real Ball Insiders, and also catch me and Carter Rodriguez on the Chase Down podcast as well.
Yeah, go subscribe to that on iTunes. And while you're there, give this podcast a 5-star rating and review. I would greatly appreciate it. It's the best way to support the show. We'll be back this weekend. You will get some just a little quick previews of the different positions I'm going to record. We'll be back on Monday with a mailbag, so get those questions into lockdowncavs@gmail.com or to @lockdowncavs on Twitter. We'll record with that on Facebook Live on Sunday, but get some extra previews this weekend to make up for the gap in shows that we had. But for myself, for Justin Rowan, this has been Lockdown Cavs, and have a good one, guys.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.